a little bit. Now, Glenn, you've been here since what time this morning?
What's your first service? 9:15?
Yeah, so about 9:17.
Yeah,
maybe you were a bit early, I don't know.
Screeching into the car park. And
these guys at the 6:30 don't know what it is to turn up on time.
No, they're still tasting the toothpaste. just got up.
Now, where have you come from?
Eastbourne. I live on the south coast next to Brighton. It's the Costa Geriatrica. It is the retirement capital of the UK. You know, all the windows are bifocal. It's great. Yeah.
Well, if we were to come to a holiday in Eastbourne, what would be your big sales pitch?
The big sales pitch is the Downs are quite nice. The South Downs are quite nice, and Beachy Head, big chalk cliffs, they're quite nice. But the rest of it's a bit of a rundown seaside town, really.
Yeah. Okay. A bit like Maidenhead without the seaside.
Yes, if you could imagine that. Yeah.
Sorry, no, I love Maidenhead. No, I really do love Maidenhead.
So basically you want to flood Maidenhead and make it Eastbourne.
That used to happen more than it does nowadays, actually. You can talk to people who've been here a long time about that if you want. Now, tell us a bit about your family.
Okay. I am married to Emma, and we have Ruby, is our 2-year-old daughter.
How's that been going for you?
Great. No, she's great. No, I'm missing her today. So, yeah, I mean, I just, you know, we put her down for bed at like 7:30, and I want to creep back up at 7:45 and pick her back up and play with her, because she's just a cutie. She's a real cutie. Yeah. But,
how does Emma find it when you do that?
She doesn't like that. No, Put her down.
Tell us a bit about you and Emma. What point did you kind of get together, and how the different ways you've been able to serve the Lord together?
I liked her first.
Okay.
About 5 years before she liked her. I think she started to like me now. I think I've grown on her. It's taken a long time, but actually we were going out with different people at university, and she was good friends with my then girlfriend, and she spent a lot of the time asking her, "What are you doing with Glenn? He's an idiot. You can do so much better than this guy." And she was genuinely serious. Like, she wasn't trying to like crowbar us apart. She just thought I was an idiot. And if you knew me back then, you'd know why. But
so she's had a positive influence on you over the years.
She has. Yeah. She's been great. But I guess we probably got serious about Jesus after university time, but I went back to Australia, where I'm from, and she was in London, and actually we were kind of the only Christians that one another knew, and we just got emailing each other and just talking about the Bible and Jesus and everything. And you know, men, it takes a long time for men to sort of twig to things, and after about 9 months of emailing this girl solidly for at least 2 hours a day, and she's sending me back reams of emails, I start to twig, maybe she's not writing to everybody at the same length and detail. And so I sent this email and said, "Dear Emma, I think I love you. I think I do. And just sort of sent that off, and then instantly regretted it. I thought, I've pushed the boat out too far. This is dreadful. And so I tried to hack into her Hotmail inbox for the next like day. I was trying every kind of password I could. And like we've been emailing each other at least once, if not twice a day, like for 9 months. How long do you think it is wise to leave a brother hanging after sending an email like that? I mean, she let me hang for like 54 hours. Not that I'm counting, and then she emailed back and she said, "I kind of feel the same way, but you're 12,000 miles away. It's your call, bro." And I don't know, we got together and God sorted out a green card, and here I am.
That's great. So relationship advice, detach to Glenn afterwards as well.
That's right. As a cautionary tale, I can tell you what not to do.
Now, you're an evangelist. That involves telling people about why Jesus is the best thing in the world, why you're passionate about him yourself, and why other people should be passionate about him as well. Tell us briefly, how did you go from being kind of not that interested in Jesus to being passionate about him?
I think it's really, when you see Jesus, you get passionate about him. I think I'd been so blasé. I'd grown up, my mum's a Christian, my dad's a great hypocrite, and so, you know, it was always a battle growing up. Who do I follow? And my dad was sort of, if I followed my dad, I thought, well, there's this name, Christianity, that's over here, but it doesn't affect any other part of your life, and it's just empty. Or there's my mum, who had a quiet faith that she didn't really force on me in any way. And at university, I sort of kind of tried to go my own way, but really what brought me back was kind of opening up the Gospels and reading about Jesus and seeing, actually, here's an interesting guy, right? Here's this guy who is this walking, talking human sacrifice who's laughing and shouting and crying and like a real person. And really seeing the personality of Christ was just massively important for me. Because I'd kind of got the idea that there's some kind of God. Mm. And I kind of got the idea that I was some kind of sinner. But really, when I opened up the Gospels, really I'm talking about 19, 20, that kind of age, I kind of saw, if this guy is what God is like, that's interesting. This is an interesting God. This is one who ends up with his arms wide to the world bleeding. That's an interesting kind of God. And if that's what God's like, I'm in. Mm. If God is just this distant individual, high on power, low on personality, then like, who can get passionate about that? But if we're talking about the Jesus God, then I'm in. And really, I guess conversion, the Bible says conversion is seeing that Jesus is Lord. And you just get to this stage where you just go, oh, like, if this guy isn't God, I don't know who is. You know, this guy's got to be. And so conversion was really, for me, just seeing, okay, Jesus is Lord. He's number one, he's tops, he's the master, he's everything. And then I just got really captivated by him and wanted to share him from that time onwards, really. And so we're talking sort of about 20 years ago.
Now, I guess in our midst today, if you've got a kind of spectrum, you've got kind of totally convinced about Jesus over here, and you've got kind of totally skeptical about him over here. All of us will put ourselves somewhere on that spectrum, some of us more this end, some of us kind of more that end. Lots of us will have friends who perhaps are down this end. How would you persuade a skeptical person that Jesus is good news for them?
I mean, evangelism, what we're talking about, witnessing, speaking about Jesus, really is kind of opening up the Bible and saying, look at Jesus. I mean, seriously. And you've got to do a lot of work of clearing away misconceptions, and people think all sorts of thoughts about what Christians are like, and you need to find ways of getting over those hurdles. But at the end of the day, it's about opening up the scriptures and saying, yeah, 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 whatever, whatever. And they bring objections, and you go, yeah, 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 I know, I know. And they bring another objection, and you go, I don't know the answer to that one. But what about this guy? What about this guy? That's kind of evangelism. And whatever you can do to keep pointing back to Jesus, and whatever you can do to sort of big him up, whatever you can do to speak of Christ, is going to be communicating the very heart of the gospel. Mm. You can waste all sorts of time about church and religion and the concept of God and is there a creator and those sorts of issues. What will really have bite is when you start talking about Jesus. And so I kind of teach people to use phrases like, that's what I love about Jesus, dot, dot, dot. You know, how do you finish that sentence? That's what I love about Christianity, dot, dot, dot. How do you finish that sentence? That's what I love about my church, dot, dot, dot. How do you finish that sentence? But these are all ways of just, you know, you're not going to get a full sermon with your friend. But you are going to be able to model something of your own enthusiasm for Jesus, just in the way that you live, but also you'll have opportunities to finish those sentences. That's what I love about Jesus. And if you can do that, you're doing the work of evangelism, and it's very exciting.
So I guess you're saying, people come with all kinds of issues, try and kind of funnel those issues into Jesus, however you can. So let's... I thought I'd see how...
Okay.
You're an evangelist, this is what you do. Let's see how good you are. So say I...
If I convert you...
Okay, I'm already... just be clear, everyone, I am a Christian.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'm a minister, I already believe in Jesus.
Will this count on my prayer letter at the end? Sam Brewster came to Christ on it. You know, anyway.
There was a story of a preacher who was converted by his own sermon, which I'll tell you about another time. So But anyway, because often people, yes, we're passionate about Jesus, but if I'm your average non-Christian, they're not my questions. You know, I'll come to you and say, Glenn, look, you know, I've had a lot of rubbish in my life. You know, X, Y, and Z has happened to me. How could God have allowed that to happen? Right. Say someone asks that question. How do you answer that in a way that is kind of pointing me towards Jesus?
One thing I do is I say, well, look, there's two main ways that the world tries to cope with a rubbish life, okay? You either say it's all karma, or you say it's all chaos, right? And both of those options are really, really popular, and both of those options are really, really rubbish, okay? So if you say, okay, I'm having a rubbish life because of karma, that's a very popular answer around the world, and people will say, bad stuff happens in your life because of you. You've put bad out into the world, and bad is now returning on your head, and you've got nothing, no one to blame except yourself. And that has a great, powerful appeal to a lot of people. The problem is, when bad stuff happens, you can't ask the why question. because it's your fault, right? Bad stuff has happened because of you or because of your ancestors or something like that. There's nothing wrong about suffering if you believe in karma. Nothing wrong about suffering. Okay, so if you say, all right, I'm not going to go for the karma answer. I'm going to come across and ask the chaos answer. And the chaos answer is, look, there's no spiritual reality. It's just random, okay? And particles collide into each other, and some people get lucky, and some people get unlucky, and there's no rhyme nor reason to it. It just is. It is what it is, right? And again, that's got a really powerful intuitive appeal. When something wrong happens in your life, you do say, oh, that's so random, right? But if everything is random, then nothing is wrong, is it? You've got no problem, okay? Suddenly, you've just kind of logicked away the problem of suffering. Because everything is just random, therefore this thing that's happened to you is not wrong. It's painful, it's maladapted for survival, you know, it's ugly, it's grotesque, it's all these things, but it's not wrong if everything is chaos, right? And so, while, you know, it might be intuitively appealing to say, okay, horrible stuff has happened in life, therefore it's all just chaos, actually, you've gotten rid of any problem with suffering. You can't call that stuff wrong. You can't say of that stuff it should not be. And so if you believe in the chaos story, if you're an atheist, for instance, then you don't have a problem with suffering. There is no problem of evil if you're an atheist. There is no problem with evil. So what I want to do with my friend is to invite them to have a problem with evil, right? Because my friend already knows that evil is a problem. They already know that it should not be. They already know that it's wrong. It's not just random, it's wrong. So I want to invite them into a worldview in which they can say, this stuff should not be. So I'm going to invite them into the Christ story. It's not the karma story. It's not the chaos story. There's a third story. It's called the Christ story, in which, yeah, things have begun with light and life and love, but we have fallen down into darkness and death and disconnection. And things are not right with this world. There is a God who is good, and there is a world that is evil. And Christians can really say that. Evil with a capital E. There's evil in this world. It's dreadful. It's horrible. And one of the benefits of being a Christian is being able to point out to the world and say, that really is wrong, terribly wrong, and it should not be. But God has not left us in this evil, dark world. The Son of God has come into this world. He has taken evil and suffering on himself on the cross. And he rises again as the only person who offers a future for this suffering world. There is no other worldview that offers a future for this suffering world. If you believe in karma, then you just want to get off the reincarnation cycle and just dissolve into the ocean of being like a drop of water into the sea. If you're in the chaos story, then there is no future for planet Earth. Okay? The sun will explode, the universe will fly out into heat death, you will die. There is no future. So I want to invite you into having a problem with the problem of suffering and evil. I also want to give you a savior who walks you through suffering and evil. And I also want to give you a hope beyond suffering and evil. And the rest of the world knows nothing about any of that. Only with Jesus can you have a problem and an answer to suffering.
Glenn, thank you. That's great. And you're right, Jesus is right at the heart of it all. And we'll be praying that you can encourage us all in that as you come in April. Now, it's April that you're coming. It's the week after Easter. Put it in your diaries. That was an easy one to remember. The week after Easter. Nothing else is going on the week after Easter, except for this kind of week of events. Glenn, tell us briefly as we finish, how can we be making the most of this opportunity that's coming our way the week after Easter?
Please do clear your diary in that week, because you might have a friend that you want to invite on Tuesday, but they can't come Tuesday, they can only come Thursday. So would you keep that week free, and would you keep coming along to these events? Because I think these events can really build momentum among Christians as we hear the good news ourselves day after day after day. But please be praying for your friends, and pray wider than you might be inclined to pray. You might think, that work colleague, there's no way she'll be interested in the gospel. Well, you don't know that. And one of the interesting things about this parable that Jesus tells about scattering seed, do you remember the one in Mark chapter 4? He scatters the seed on all sorts of soil types. And what you find as you scatter the seed, as you put invitations out far and wide, you'll be really shocked at how much hard soil there is. You'll be really shocked that there are people who really are hardened to the gospel. But you'll also be really shocked about how much good soil there is out there. And the more you invite, the more you'll find people who will be responsive to this message. So can you be thinking, can you be praying, and can you be bold to invite friends? Because I think it's going to be a great week.
Ben, thank you very much. Things we can pray for you and the family maybe over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, we've got lots of different mission weeks coming up. So next week I'm in Durham with the students at Durham University, and then the week after I'm with Queen's University in Belfast. And then I'm with a church in St. Albans for the best part of a week. And then I'm in Bangor in Northern Ireland for the best part of a week. So I've got lots of different church missions coming up. It's a heavy season for missions. Students love this time of year, and churches love this time of year for putting on missions. So pray for family life. Emma's got Ruby, and pray that they will be kept happy and healthy, and pray for fruit from these missions.
Glenn, thank you very much. Go and grab a
Pleasure.
Seat.
Mm.
Thank you, Glenn. Now, there's going to be some really great publicity on the way for the Real Lives Week, so it'll be dead easy to invite friends. We'll say, look, here are the five evenings. Which one would you like to come to? So that'll be coming in the next couple of weeks' time. And we're going to have three or four little slots at the evening at our kind of 6:30 congregation, where we kind of chew over real lives in particular and think about how we can make the most of it. So we'll be doing that over the coming months as well.